is die religie die opvolgers, en al die afgesluitmente religie die opvolgers, wat in Hiddesmaat, waar jy ons betreft, het hier sy tijd, wat die members, dat jy kom aan die nette woord, I was waiting for you, dat ek as, nou dat jy van haar, dat jy sy tegen vraag, dus ook hoe ek het sê, members, we, it's a, it's not funny, but it's an unusual practice. Today we are meeting the two committees. The committee for TTI and the committee for science and technology. I must apologize for the chairperson of the TTI portfolio committee. She's got a serious problem in Johannesburg and she left for Johannesburg. So she's not around. But I'm told that Honorable Mkonzi is the one who's going to take the flag if there is anything that goes to the portfolio committee for TTI. She's the one who's there to answer. So, and I'm very happy that you're here. But you're sitting right at the bench. You should sit at the front. You should sit at the front so that we can see you. No. Oh, you're moving for the lady. Yeah. Is this not 50-50? So, of course, it's going to be telling you for the chairperson which one has. Today we're meeting, it's actually an entity belonging to the Department of Trade and Industry, led by Dr. Martinez, which is our South African Council of for Space Affairs. So they're going to be giving us a presentation, and the Department of Trade and Industry is here. So, but they're not going to make a presentation. But if the question, some of the questions go and involve them, they're here to answer questions. So members, I think we can start the meeting. Though we started a little bit late, but we can start the meeting. And I'm going to request the members to introduce themselves, because I only know the members from GST. I don't know the members from Trade and Industry. I'm hoping that GST is here. I'm not sure that GST is here. But now that we're going to be talking about GST is here. Oh, okay. See, if GST is here, you know that there's something that you said, maybe it's one that GST is here, which you might take up. I'm just mentioning it. It's not part of the meeting. You know, there's a new virus that comes in. But I'm not sure whether it's a mutation or it's a new virus that comes in and causes people, but this year we've had Ebola. And Ebola seems not to be doing usual way that it is done in the previous year. I much as one doesn't want to downplay, but it has not been a big problem in South Africa. Solely because when it started in West Africa, it was winter with us. So the temperature was very low. It was not going to be very easy for the virus to survive the low temperature. But now our temperature is starting going up now. So it makes it a little bit of a problem that if it can happen, then it will be able to survive even in our country. And in fact, I'm mentioning this because we've noticed that the budget of Department of Science and Technology doesn't match the work that we expect from that department. Within that department is cross-cutting. It's involving every department. And if probably we put definitely you look at the budget for this, but it's something that we should think of. Do we have something that we can, not for the Ebola now, but for the future? Because this is the climate change is the space that is becoming so huge is actually changing the planet and is actually changing the organisms in this world. So it's something that we need to see if we can do the science and try and develop something so that we can be, we don't need to be driven by microorganisms. We need to be the ones who drive the microorganisms, not them driving us. And we can see that they can mutate, they can do anything. So if, as parliamentarians, we need to assist in whatever way, especially financially, what they need to talk to you so that we can see how we can do it, especially
Morning, Chairperson, honorable members, the department, the DMG.
comes re-engaging, but it's originally actually originating from the province of the Eastern Cape, deployed by the ANC in the portfolio committee on trade and industry.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. My name is Hemba Msimang. I am in the Portfolio Committee of Trade and Industry from the IFT.
Thank you. Let's go to the president. Good morning. My name is Ted Mania. I'm from Portfolio Committee on Defense and Military Veterans.
So we are clearing the space. We are coming to clear the space.
I am Chair. I wish to just apologize in advance. I have to start for another meeting and then I intend to come back and I apologize in advance.
Thank you very much,
members.
Myself. I'm Dean McPherson. I'm a member of the Democratic Alliance and I sit on the Portfolio Committee for Trade and Industry. Thank you.
You know, the group are looking very young, so I thought you were better off the side of the
day. I won't take that as an ageist comment, but that's fine.
Okay.
I just thought that the members want to be listening to your presentation, and after that, we will engage you with that presentation. So you can keep up. Perhaps you want to know who is here. You know, the department is here. All the departments are here, and then there's the structure. I'm not sure whether if the department is supposed to be the GGI or not.
Good morning, Chairperson, honorable members, and colleagues from the Ministry and the Department of State Affairs, which is a regulatory body. That is regulation of things related matters in the country. We are with our colleagues from science, from science and technology that are coming to help us, and we are working within this area together. The people are here, I think if you allow me a transaction, let me ask people to introduce themselves. I'll start with myself. I am Nomfunia Gomajaja. I work as the GGI Chief Director of Advancement Culture in terms of faith and defense, and faith is research into this energy we had of the portfolio that I'm doing by the department. Thank you. Maybe we can start outside from Dr. Mfani.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members. My name is Val Mutani. I'm a member of the South African Council for Space Affairs. I'm also Chief Specialist of Astronomy and African Space Science in the Department of Science and Technology. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, Madam Chair, honorable members. My name is Tetule Sekula. I'm an advocate, a lawyer in private practice, but a member of the South African Council for Space Science. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, honorable members. I'm Peter Martinez, the Chairman of the South African Council for Space Affairs. And in another life, also a professor of space studies at the University of Cape Town.
Good morning, members. I'm Lulu Makapela. I'm a member of the South African Council for Space Affairs and also a representative of the Council for Scientific and Industrial in the CSIR within the Council. Thank you.
Good morning, I'm Marley Kamolo, and I'm the assistant to Professor and Dr. Peter Martinez of the South African Council of Space Affairs. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Bonin Mota. I'm the Deputy Director General for Technology Innovation and the Department of Science and Technology. I'd like the presentation goes to come here that the Department of Trade is responsible for policy and innovation and science and technology for implementation.
Good morning, Chair and members, honorable members. My name is Sumlan Gao. I'm the Chief Director responsible for Space Science and Technology at the Department of Science and Technology. Thank you.
Jefferson, if you allow me to start this presentation.
Thank you, Honourable Chair and Honourable Committee members. It's a great pleasure for us to be able to address this joint sitting of the Portfolio Committees for Science and Technology and Patent Industry, because I think this is a wonderful example of one of the principles of our policy, our national space policy, which is relates to the issue of cooperative governance and space activities, which I will come back to a bit later in the presentation. So, I was when I had a preparatory meeting with the chairpersons of the two portfolio committees, we discussed the topics that we should cover in this presentation, and I was asked to provide a briefing on why space science and technology is important for South Africa, and to describe societal benefits and thereby to set the context for the need for regulation and oversight. So when most people think about space technology, perhaps the first image that comes to mind is what you see on the screens in front of you, maybe astronauts floating in space and doing all sorts of scientific things. But the reality of the matter is that most satellites in space are actually put up there to provide services to people on the ground. Only a tiny fraction of all the satellites are put in space to do scientific experiments. Most of them provide services that you and I and everybody else outside of this parliamentary complex relies on every single day of our lives. If you have a cell phone and it's switched on right now, you are relying on the space system. If you use a debit card to draw money from an ATM, you are relying on the space system. If you use the internet, you're using the space system. I'll give you some examples as we go. But there are three main pillars of space technology that we rely on in our daily lives. And perhaps the most significant of those is satellite communications, which we use in many different ways. My colleagues and I often used to joke that if we wanted people to understand the value of satellite communications, we'll just pull the plug on the satellite feed during the World Cup final we hosted a few years ago. And that would have very clearly illustrated the utility of satellite technology. Another growing area that uses space technology is what we call satellite-aided position, timing, and navigation. Now, that's a complex-sounding name, but perhaps better known by many of you here is GPS. I'm sure many of you have GPS navigators or GPS on your cell phones. And the thing is that it's actually usable, it's a timing system, and it's usable not only for navigation, but for many other things, like financial transactions, like the internet, controlling electricity grids, street light networks, and so on. And so really, things that we all rely on in our personal lives on a daily basis. Another main pillar of space technology is what we call Earth observation, that is, observing the Earth from space. And the reasons why we do this are manifold. We, in the beginning of the space age, this was done primarily for military reasons, trying to, the two Cold War superpowers keeping an eye on each other. And indeed, it was the ability to do this that, in some sense, guaranteed the strategic stability, the fact that both superpowers could verify that treaties were being complied with by the other side. But nowadays, Earth observation has a much more civilian utility, things like disaster management, food security, and so on, and I will show you many examples as we go. So this space we talk about as a place to be, as a subject and an object of policy. Where is this space? Where does it actually start? I thought it might be interesting to use a tool, a space tool that is available to all of you. I'm sure many of you have spent some amusing time looking at the Earth with the Google Earth tool. And that's the National Assembly building seen from a height of a few hundred meters. And you see the parliamentary precinct there. I'm sure all of you recognize that area very well. If we go up to an altitude of a kilometer or so, you begin to see the structure of the city. And images like this are very useful for mapping purposes, especially the things like disasters that happen. You need to assess very quickly where the damaged buildings are and so on. Going up to an even higher altitude, this is 5 kilometers up, you begin to see the city hall, the waterfront area, you see the mountain area, you begin to see at even a higher altitude, you begin to see Robben Island and so on. And if you, this is at an altitude of 50 kilometers, very useful for things like mapping climate change, where you're not interested in what's happening down at the level of 1 meter, but you're more interested in what's happening on scales of kilometers, things like soil erosion and so on. Going up to an altitude of 100 kilometers, you basically are in space at 100 kilometers, and if, instead of looking straight downward, you were to look sideways out of the window, this is what you would see. Now, this is important to realize that space is actually not very far away, it's very close. The thing is, of course, an uphill all the way, very expensive to get satellites up there. But the important thing is that we do not have to build satellites to enjoy the benefits of the data from the many, many satellites that are up there in space. So it's a question of deciding what is the appropriate level of space activities for each country to engage in. This is an iconic image of the Earth from space, and I just want to show you how the space environment has become more and more utilized by a greater number of countries and a growing diversity of space actors. Whereas in the early days of the space age, and you see a few dots on that diagram around the Earth, those are the early satellites that you would have seen in space in the late 1950s and early 1960s, just a few handful of satellites put up by the superpowers. Then gradually more countries became involved. This is in the 1970s. You can see quite a growing number of satellites in space, all providing services to people on the ground. In the 1980s, even more countries getting involved. 1990s, space getting really crowded. Those are the 2000s. So you can see that many actors becoming involved in the space arena. And this is the latest situation as of about a year or two ago. And you can see that in such an environment, regulation is absolutely necessary. So many countries all active in the space environment, and space by itself being an international activity by its very nature. But why do we do it? Well, we don't do it because of the technological challenges of putting satellites up there. We do it to serve people on the ground. And we do it to address issues like food security, making sure, for example, that we know about problems with, for example, potential crop failures before they happen, because these can lead to instabilities in a region, or having to know that you need to deliver food to populations at risk of malnutrition or perhaps even starvation. Water security, another big problem that space can help to provide tools to manage. In terms of addressing not only the availability of water, which some space technologies can do, but also even assisting us to understand the quality of water as well. Urban management, another area that space technology is widely used in. The slide shows a picture of a taxi rank somewhere in Gauteng, and the individual little white dots that you see on there, those are individual taxis. And images like this are very useful for planning the construction of facilities to accommodate the users of these taxis, so therefore serving commuters in a very practical way. Disaster management is an area in which the different pillars of space technology come together in a beautifully complementary way, in the sense that in a disaster, and this example here is the flood disasters from Mozambique of a few years ago, often in a disaster the terrestrial communications infrastructure is wiped out, so even cell phones might not work. In the case of the flood, your terrestrial landmarks are all underwater. So a pilot flying over a flooded area, unless the pilot has a GPS to refer to their position, they wouldn't have a clue where they are because they can't see any road markings or things that they would see on normal maps. And so the communications, satellite navigation, and the air observation also helps to assess the scale of the disaster. Fires are another major area. As you sit here, there are currently about 3,000 fires burning in sub-Saharan Africa, and these cause huge losses of livestock and also human life. We have in this country a system called APHIS, which is operational, which can send a cell phone SMS to a game ranger or a farmer, telling them in real time that a fire has broken out and where to go to do something about it before it becomes a problem. is another example. In this case, disaster management of volcanoes. I'm sure many of you will remember the volcanic eruption in Goma of 10 or 12 years ago. And what this slide shows is on the left-hand side, the black mass that you see on the left there, that is the lava front that was advancing and obscuring the runways at the airport in Goma. You can see one of the runways extending off the bottom of the picture. And if you look carefully, you can see an airplane on the apron there. It's very important if you're sitting in a humanitarian relief organization in Geneva or here in South Africa, we're planning peacekeeping or assistance missions, to have images like this so that we know what conditions to expect when the relief workers arrive. Another example of a peacekeeping application of space technology, this is mass migrations in the Great Lake region in the late 90s, where there were refugee camps, and images like this assist with the planning of the delivery of services, food, sanitation, etc. The Honourable Chair was referring in his opening remarks to diseases. Waterborne diseases are one of the areas that space technology can play a role, and in this particular case, it's an illustration of the use of space technology to support the fight against malaria. Nature conservation, important for our country in the sense that we derive a lot of tourist income from our biodiversity, and of course it's part of our heritage which has to be protected. Space technology playing a huge role in protecting our biodiversity, and I don't know if you can see it, I'll point it out with the mouse. Here's a giraffe sporting a nicely color-matched GPS collar that allows game rangers to track the movements of these animals, and obviously you can think of the potential applications and things like anti-poaching and so on. Another example, land use change. You can see these images of Midrand taken 15 years apart, how an area has changed because of growing settlements in that area, and images like this are very useful for planning the placement of facilities in a particular region to serve the public. Here's an example of droughts and desertification, where one can see using satellite images how in different times of the year or in different years some of the areas are quite parched, and gives us a warning as to where we might have problems with things like water rationing and so on. So I'm giving you a number of examples, and there are more in the slides in front of you which you can see in your own time, but I think just to illustrate the power of space technology. Space technology these days is also useful for treaty compliance, not only security-oriented treaties, but also environmental treaties. And in fact, it's been used by NGOs as well as governments to monitor and expose human rights and environmental violations. Also has applications in areas like telemedicine and teleeducation, and in some countries like India has been put to tremendous use. So those are just some examples that I thought it would be very helpful to show you in a short 90-second video what a day would be like if space was to be switched off, how that would affect you, your lives, if we were to switch off space one day. I hope this is going to work. Let's just try and see. Yeah.
On response to the GPS satellite collapses. A final call on GPS satellites can transmit from the standpoint. The implementation of massive infrastructure can require 359,000 participants and risk of potential cancer damage. A bipolar card is presented from the group. Billions of dollars we have to continue to use for this during a financial crash. Nuclear is a
And just just gives you a little sense of how we have become very, very reliant on space technologies all around the world, and in a way that perhaps most people don't really realize in their daily lives. In the next part of my presentation, I would like to give you a brief historical overview of the space activity in our country, and before I move on to the policy and regulatory aspects. Institutional space-related activities can be traced back to the 1820s with the South African Astronomical Observatory based here in Cape Town, in Observatory, that's where the suburb got its name from. And this facility still continues to this day and operates the Southern African Large Telescope, which I'm sure many members of the two committees will know about. In the 1960s, in the early days of the space age, South Africa began to support the conduct of space missions, primarily by the Europeans and the United States, just because of alliances at that time. And facilities such as this one were directed in South Africa. This is the Hartebeestfontein, currently known as the Hartebeestfontein Radio Astronomy Observatory. And right next door to it, we have the Satellite Application Center, or used to be the Satellite Application Center. Now it is a center of the SANSA, the Space Operations Center of the South African National Space Agency, SANSA. In the 1980s and early 90s, there was a clandestine military space program that had as its objectives the development of a reconnaissance satellite and a launch vehicle to deliver the satellite into space. The program never became operational. It was terminated before satellites could be deployed in orbit, but there was a lot of infrastructure that was established at the time which is still in existence and which is available for the development of the South African space program. Here's, for example, a photograph illustrating a thermal vacuum chamber that simulates space conditions so that people can do tests. And these facilities are in Gravo, not far from Cape Town. In the early 2000s, South Africa built the South African Large Telescope, SALT, in Sutherland, which I expect, or I suspect some of you may have visited in person. This is currently the largest single optical telescope in the Southern Hemisphere and is built by a consortium led by South Africa. The success of SALT led to the development of the Sumandila satellite program. This is the first government-owned satellite that was developed under contract to the Department of Science and Technology. Sumandila, meaning lead the way, was a pathfinder mission for our space program. The satellite had some huge benefits. Most of the benefits from this program were in fact on the ground rather than in space in terms of capacity building. And I should perhaps, at the end of the presentation, hand over to our colleague, the DDG from DST, who may elaborate on those aspects. This is an image of Cape Town taken by Sumandila. If you look carefully, you can see the harbour. You can pick out the stadium, the soccer stadium that was built for the World Cup, and many of the other structures. Another project that is currently under development, again, a world-class leading project, is a square kilometer array and Meerkat, shown here on the slide. And I chose this slide because it illustrates the involvement of South African industry, and I know that there's a lot of effort to maximize the local content, the localization of South African participation in this huge global project. And I'm sure our DST colleagues will tell us in more detail about some of those initiatives. Our most recent space mission was a university-built satellite, and I chose this example deliberately to make the point that space activities are no longer just the preserve of government, but there are now academic institutions also involved. This is a satellite called CEPISA-SAT, not much larger than a Rubik's Cube, a tiny, tiny satellite, but built here in Cape Town, the first African-built nanosatellite, launched last November, and here is a picture of the Cape returned by that satellite from space. Turning now to the global space industry and South Africa's positioning in that, clearly we are not a major space power, and this is a diagram that shows the worldwide investments in space activities, and I see that you have the graphs in your handout, so I won't read up the numbers, which I think it's useful to see on the screen. But just to make the point, just to put it in the picture, in terms of investment, the United States invests $2 out of every $3 that is spent in space. They spend more money in space than the whole rest of the world combined. And the reason for this is obvious. It's because of all societal, commercial, and security benefits that arise from space activities. This is another view of the space, global space budgets. This is from an OECD report from 2009, showing you the expenditure by the various countries, and South Africa does not even appear on that chart. You can see the non-Russian BRIC component right at the bottom of that slide. But perhaps the figures that you may find easier to relate to, this chart shows you the worldwide revenues for space activities in 2001 and 2012, and you can see how that figure has grown to almost a $200 billion industry. It is huge. And the second thing I want to point out is that most of that, the financial activity is not in space, it's on the ground. It's that huge blue segment that you see on the right-hand side of those discs. So satellite services, meaning services on the ground that people are willing to pay for. Also ground equipment, another 29%. So about 70% of the revenues are spent on the ground and are focusing on services on the ground. And the space component is actually very small. If we look at the geopolitics of space cooperation, there's some interesting possibilities for South Africa. South Africa is in BRICS, and I've illustrated the BRICS countries in blue there, our BRICS partners. And we are also in the ICSA partnership. And again, our ICSA partners, Brazil, India, and South Africa, and India and Brazil, have more developed and complementary space capabilities that we can harness in a strategic partnership to pull ourselves up technologically, and I'll come back to this in a moment. The African countries illustrated in orange on that slide are Algeria, Nigeria, and Kenya, and together with those countries, South Africa is pursuing a program called the African Resource Monitoring Constellation Program, which aims to build a series of satellites to monitor the Earth, and those satellites, each one will be contributed by one country, but each country in the consortium will have access to the other satellites, thereby increasing the effective coverage of the satellites to address our national and regional concerns. In terms of benchmarking our capabilities, this is a study, the results of a study that was performed by DST some years ago, in which there was an assessment of the technical capability in our industry to pursue space programs. And so on the horizontal axis of that chart, what you see is a measure of our space capability, our technical, engineering, scientific capability. And on the vertical axis, it shows an indication of how many space activities, space projects have been launched. And so if you look there, the blue bubble in the top right, not surprisingly, those are the countries that are leading in space activities globally, like the United States, the Russian Federation, Europe, China, Japan, and so on. Then there is an intermediate group of countries, like Brazil and India, our ITSA partners, which are not quite fully independent, but well on their way to achieving end-to-end capability in space. And then a group of emerging space nations in the bottom, in that green bubble, and you can see the position of South Africa in that slide. If I zoom into that small group of countries, this is what you see in more detail. You can see there South Africa as being among the more technically capable countries in that collection, and also the other orange dots in that diagram show our African ARM partners and where they lie. Now, the interesting thing about this slide is that it shows the fair degree of technical capability, and this is because of previous investments in aerospace and defense infrastructure, some of which I alluded to in my earlier slides. So in terms of, as you saw in that diagram, you have this series of bubbles in a sort of rising trajectory. So the path to self-sufficiency is to
seek partnerships that will allow us to progress up that ladder and therefore become more self-reliant in using space technology to meet our own national requirements. In terms of our industry, we have a small but a very innovative space industry. This is our industrial actors are illustrated on the slide. Of course, there are many, many other companies in South Africa that have technical capacity to contribute to the space program, but these are some of the companies that have more of a space focus, I would say. Government has played a significant role as an enabler in this, and as I said in my opening remarks, we place a strong emphasis on cooperative governance of space activity because it cuts across the mandate of a number of space activities, cuts across the mandates of several departments. And so government plays an enabling role primarily through the DTI and science and technology, but on the international front through DIRCO and also communications plays a very significant role. As I mentioned in my opening remarks, space is by its very nature an international activity, and South Africa plays a significant role in the United Nations body that discusses space affairs. It's called the United Nations Committee on Space Affairs, or CORPUS. South Africa has been an active member of CORPUS since 1994, and in fact we are chairing one of the very, very important working groups in CORPUS that is worrying about what to do about that growing proliferation of space debris out there in space that is causing serious concerns for the operators of space satellites, and we in South Africa are leading the UN discussions in that regard. The UN has adopted a number of international treaties that govern space activities. The most fundamental of these is the Treaty on the Outer Space Treaty, the first one there, Treaty on Principles Governing the Activities of States in the Exploration and Use of Outer Space. The other subsequent treaties are basically elaborations of some of the principles contained in the Outer Space Treaty. In South Africa, we have domesticated our international treaty obligations through the Space Affairs Act of 1993, as revised in 1995, and the South African Council for Space Affairs is established in terms of the Space Affairs Act to implement our national treaty obligations and to provide the oversight requirements. One of the obligations from our international treaties is that governments, in international law, governments bear the responsibility for authorizing and implementing space activities. So in this regard, FACS is a licensing body that implements that international obligation. The council is appointed by the Minister of Trade and Industry, and his photograph of the council shortly after its appointment in 2010. A number of the councillors are here with us today, and hopefully they will be able to respond to some of your questions in the discussion period. The objects of the Council that I set out to make sure that South Africa complies with our international treaty obligations. We also discuss international cooperation issues in regulatory affairs. The implementation side is led by our DSC colleagues or the other relevant departments. We are involved in the domestic regulation of space affairs through the Space Affairs Act, through cooperative governance between DTI and other government departments, and one of our aims is to promote an enabling regulatory environment for our industry so they can thrive and so that South Africa is an attractive destination for international industrial partners to come and conduct business as well. We also have a policy and advisory role. In terms of advising the Minister on various issues relating to space affairs. As legislators, you will no doubt be interested in why we think that space requires a special attention from a regulatory perspective, and basically it's because the space environment is completely different to any terrestrial environment, and it needs its own special legal regime. You cannot just take the legal regime that pertains to aviation and extend that into outer space. You need space law to ensure a safe, sustainable, orderly, and predictable space environment for all space users. You can see that we are approaching almost $200 billion annual revenues in space, so clearly many industrial actors in space, many non-industrial actors, and so where there's a potential for accidents, there's always liability issues that arise, and so therefore we need regulation and legislation. In South Africa, as I said, we place some emphasis on cooperative governance of station activities, and we separate the regulation, policy and oversight, which falls to the DTI and SACSA, from the implementation aspects, which are led by DSB and SANZO, the space agency. And internationally, this is being held out. In the UN, I've seen South Africa being held out as an example to other emerging space nations of how to organize their space programs in a post-Cold War era. Many space activities, as the chair alluded to in his opening remarks, had their origins in the Cold War, and particularly with a sort of military or security mindset. We now see space as a global utility that provides services to civilians. And so therefore this is a different way of approaching space issues, and a much wider approach involving many government departments. So cooperative governance is an important aspect. And it's important also to separate the regulation from the implementation. Some countries don't do this, and sometimes it leads to very bizarre consequences. For example, in Italy, the Italian Space Agency is the implementer and the regulator, and they fund Italian space activities. But it's now so big, space has become so accessible and so affordable to smaller entities that an Italian university a few years ago built a satellite without requiring funding from the Italian government. And because the Italian government didn't fund it, because the agency didn't know about it, there was no license issued. And the regulator discovered that the Republic of the State of Italy was liable for an international space object by reading about it in the newspapers. It's very important to separate regulation and implementation. Of course, this cooperative governance does pose challenges, but we believe that the benefits that we can achieve from the cooperative governance approach far outweigh the challenges, and we have, or rather the DTI and DST have recently concluded a protocol on cooperative governance of space activities that clarifies the relative roles of these various departments and the entities that resort under them. In terms of our national space policy, and as the chair will involve me on just a few more minutes, and I'm almost at the end. Policy, our national space policy was tabled, or rather adopted a few years ago, following an extensive multi-year process to develop the policy. And basically the policy has a number of objectives, such as creating an enabling regulatory environment, promoting a domestic space industry, strengthening our space science and technology base so that we can harness space technology for societal benefit, and also enhancing our international cooperation. We have a series of six guiding principles of our national policy. The first being that we will pursue space activities that contribute to economic growth and sustainable development, and we do this through using space for peaceful purposes, through developing an appropriate set of space capabilities and products, through ensuring that South Africa and therefore the stakeholders within South Africa are responsible users of the space environment, that we don't pollute outer space, that we promote R&D in space science and technology, and that our DST colleagues are doing very well. That we promote greater levels of self-sufficiency. If you'll remember the chart that I showed you a few minutes ago about the reliability that we have on other nations for our access to space data and services, and that we promote cooperation that is mutually beneficial with other nations in the world, but particularly with our African counterparts. As an example of some of the regulatory activities, South Africa, the SACSA maintains a register of our South African space objects, which we are obliged to do on international commitments, and this is an image of the website for SACSA and of our national space register. We also register our space objects with the United Nations, and there you can see the relevant page for South Africa on the UN website. SACSA is also involved with the development or the training of the next generation of space lawyers. You can imagine the many, many legal questions that arise when there are so many users of space services. So not only legal questions in space, but on the ground related to policy and all sorts of related questions. And DTI and SACSA have played a significant role in supporting the training of young South Africans to participate in international events like the Moot Court. We've also been involved in hosting major international astronautical congresses. This was the event we hosted here in Cape Town in 2011. You can see there the Minister of Trade and Industry opening the industry exhibition that was a part of that event. And first time this event was held on the African continent, and a huge success. South Africa was not only hosting it, but and I should mention especially for this audience that the South African Parliament hosted an international event, parliamentarians, in which parliamentarians from other countries came and met with our parliamentarians to discuss the societal relevance of space issues. And perhaps some of you here today may remember participating in this event. We have participated subsequently in other congresses. This is a picture of the South African Pavilion in Beijing at the Congress last year. 2 weeks from now, South Africa will participate again in the Astronautical Congress in Toronto, and I believe, and perhaps the Honourable Chair can confirm that, hopefully we will again have a delegation from our Parliament attending this year, which would be fantastic. Getting very close to the end now, the South African Space Affairs Act, which was passed in 93, is now more than 20 years old. The space environment is evolving very, very rapidly, and the Space Affairs Act needs to be updated to take account of the changing global and national space arena. The DTI has set in process a review of the Space Affairs Act, and a study was commissioned, which was led by the University of Pretoria, to assess the current shortcomings and gaps in the current Space Affairs Act, and a task team has been established to take this forward, which we'll be happy to discuss more details in the discussion phase. But of course, for the purposes of this joint sitting, just to emphasize that as this process of review goes ahead, we would very much look forward to engage with yourselves and to be guided by yourselves as to the aspects of the review of the Act. So I would like to conclude at this point, and perhaps with the indulgence of the Chair, to invite our DST colleague, DDG, Mourney, if he would like to add anything to the remarks that I've just made. Thank you.
Some of the things are very scary, but some of them they've got answers at the end. But to remember about it, in case we would allow you not a doctor to it.
Not yet.
Okay. You are good.
I hope very soon. Thank you, Chair. I think it's really just important to indicate here that as soon as we had a space policy in place, we developed a strategy. Which strategy was really focus on ensuring that South Africa is one of the leading nations when it comes to the digitalization of space. But what we also wanted to do was to ensure that space is able to provide information that will empower decision making in government and also play. And then in doing so, hopefully, you'll be able to then catch up the sector or the section of the global market as the figures have shown of how big the market is functioning. I think over the years, as we implement this strategy, the number of successes that we have achieved, some of them is mentioned, but I think it's important to also know that even in space, people are very physical. And we have therefore set out to develop capacity through various programs. There was mention made of the Sumandira satellite program. That program was not just about the building of satellites, it was also about the building of capacity. So we had the same of students. We managed to graduate 18 master's students, 3 PhDs, and then we also had 8 interns. And what we also chose to do with implementing those same programs was that we looked into ensuring that we also take care of the representativity and the demographics of the country. So in all instances, on the first program, obviously, we had in terms of the matters, the 50-50% both agenda and racial representation. And I'm really pleased to say that the students who have gone through this program, some of them are now employed within SANDA, which is our state agency. some are employed within the companies that have shown the slides here, the South African space companies, and some would consider this part of the banking technology as well. The dimension made of the Tube satellite program. Now, the Tube satellites, which we launched the satellite last year in November, these are very small satellites, 10 by 10 centimeter. We got into that program specifically for human capacity development, that is really for training of students. And it was really a moment of pride for us when a student manufactured satellite was launched. Yes, you could see it was, in some ways it's related some information back, it's also doing what we call a space weather research. But most importantly, it has really initiated a process where now the country we are amongst the countries that are regarded as active in this true search environment. You know, definitely one of the hubs in terms of true search progress in the emerging economies. We have in that program from since we started, exposed 137 young students in the program. Of those 127, 29 Israeli positions of them are women, 105 of them are black people. So we are really doing an industry where in the future, in our view, we are going to have a very competitive space industry in the future. The exciting thing about the student program is also that the technology that is going into the small satellite, the two satellites, some of these have really the subsystem that has been sent from the industry, so the receiving information that some of them have been actually implemented and sold. And again, if we have a program of that nature and we partner in there, of course, with our French counterparts through what we call the French counterpart technology program. And we're hoping that as we prepare to have all the other areas making now the satellite program, that honorable members of the committee who would have been part of the stage presentation by Sandra, you will recall that we have now entered the satellite program, this program which we're hoping to launch by 2019. And our view is that the current that we are now building is going to become an integral part of this program going forward. And ultimately what we're looking forward to is really the level of self-sufficiency that is crucial to the plan. We have in terms of applications already started using it in various government programs. For example, our independent electoral commission, they're using study size in terms of planning. If you have the picture of 1994 election, those snaking shoes, the reason why we don't have those anymore is because through space science we are able to look at how and where the space station can be located to make sure that we don't really have that kind of recording. We're using the same thing, for example, with imagery research into private sector as well. We are planning in terms of substations, also in form of software, and also in terms of how do they monitor their infrastructure, which is crucial. Governments, we've got a lot of infrastructure spread everywhere, and space and safety is crucial in doing that. And I think one area that we are going to really get into is to make sure that we identify more users who can utilize space, because it's very crucial for us nowadays in terms of our urban assessment, how we deliver services. Some of the services you need to have a sense of how the land is laid out, whether the area is going to be agricultural, etc. If you don't do that, in a country like ours, the agricultural land is, the arable land is very small. You can actually find that you're utilizing a lot of agricultural land for settlement and agriculture. So basically, we have made progress in the implementation and the growth of the space industry. The problem, of course, indicated the number of companies that are now doing business, they are exporting, and if we haven't really gone through this path, we wouldn't be where we are in terms of space. And so that's really what is important to highlight, the progress that we've made. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
African Union structures where a number of policy organs which have pushed space science technology at a program level, such as the CIT, which is the Communication Information Technology Ministerial Conference, where some committees have met these large guys, and then the AMCOS, which is the African Ministers Council on Science Technology. All of these different institutions within the AU were trying to set up space programs for various different reasons. So there was an executive decision taken to put all of these initiatives under AMCOS, which is the African Ministers Council on Science Technology. So in 2012, we started off the Space Working Group, which is currently chaired by South Africa, to develop an African space policy and an African space strategy. So the African space policy has been finished, and there's a draft African space strategy on the table. So the intention is to have the African space strategy concluded by December this year, to take it to the heads of state, the African Union Summit, in June 2015. So the intention thereafter is to set up an African space program. The other, very quickly, the African Union has initiated a program to establish African universities across the continent. And so there are five universities, and Southern Africa was awarded the hosting for the Pan-African University Space Lounge. And South Africa currently has been awarded the hosting rights. So we're currently just trying to put a proposal together in terms of how South Africa would address the human capital needs of the African continent when it comes to space.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Remember, we are not going to have time for two. But this member of council has something to do with limited time, but in terms of Nicole, the monthly, they have something to do. I was saying to someone, you know, if you scale it, you show us that. But you need something that is proper. And you have shown the council and the council what to do. But our investment seems to be very good in South Africa. It's such an important issue, especially when you show that you can just pull one plan. Everything will be gone. I imagine the Senate that, you know, it's a week or 2 weeks ago when Senate that the problem was related, whether it was related to this or not. But the Senate that the whole country there was a problem. I'm not sure whether it was related to this. But I think it's a little bit of a certain argument. Neither have we got enough human resources to help you. But they are talking to lawmakers here. They are talking to policymakers. And obviously, looking at that end is going to be something that we're going to put in the papers as to what we do, especially that the government was going to remember that that is the presentation that is engaged with it as lawmakers before the continent. Okay, I see Malindi. Oh, everybody wants to have a share. Okay, let's start with Malindi, who will go down in the front row, and then we'll come to the next one.
Thank you so much, Chair. Thank you very much for the...
We expect you to ask 10 questions. We're hoping that your heads will be able to keep enough. Most of you are very learned, so you'll be able to keep all the questions and write them down. I think that even learned and people are very brilliant. So you just take the lecture ahead and then you will respond.
Thank you very much, Jane, and thanks for the presentation. Very concrete, and it was from my opinion of presenting a telescopic eye. So, more easier to see what and actually see what on those slides. My question is around first on the responsibilities of the department, because I think probably the cleanest of what the case is to, if we have to remove what we need, you know, science and technology from trade and industry, because it's something that has been going on, and how far are those discussions on taking what we believe belongs to science and technology, and leave trade and industry, to trade in that industry, and also if I still collaborate with science and technology. The interesting questions that came to mind as representing last week I was empowered to learn that the stars you see are 4.2 years behind. So if the nib of flame was here for the star making wish, so you must count will happen in the 4.2 years that initiative is there. I'm interested in the issue of the assets. If the space monitoring also check the assets and how far has it been? Because I think sometimes when I look at the key, call it climate change, for me it also has to do with the assets, right? For the near future, actually, the assets is round and it's moving. So sometimes we'll be in the loop. If you do that, of you know, the thought that aspect. When I talk about the responsibilities or the configuration of the two departments, I think it's for us to empower us to have in our KP for more sources and manage for both trading industry and science and technology. Because I think we do have that capacity to participate for more in understanding that especially science and technology is not properly or adequately funded to be able to do all these discoveries and innovations around science and technology and other. I think the transition part is the issue of the standard bank. I also have the same question of whether the standard bank had about 2 weeks ago were and when I said things was, I don't think them, and I think it was good. It is also worrying that the investment in saying that South Africa is not featured. Or why it is a major country. But probably it is because of our people's understanding also of what service delivery is, because our electorates look at houses and roads and not other issues of science, technology and stuff like that. So we invest, and so why invest in buying arms? Why invest in space when you don't have houses? So I think it's a tricky area that we are in. That space technology, an interesting idea, it's something that the identification of some of the circumstances, the issue of the Bermuda Triangle, including that the space technology, identify and come with a solution or to make us understand what causes that Bermuda Triangle that we get into this triangle, everything and also the latest. Whether it is the Malaysia airline itself, whether it's got some magnet that pulls it towards this current disaster that are happening, or that space, check the space towards Malaysia and so, because there's still a state now of those air crashes around there. On the space, I know that the technology officials understand our kind of questions, and you have spoken about the issues of young students and women and black, because it was a question I was going to ask, but also people with disabilities and what programs do you have to ensure that that happens, including also the mentoring thereof of young and upcoming talent, nationality, and so that as the old technologies and engineers are aging, and the young people, especially those who are previously disadvantaged, are able to be recognized. And lastly, with the relationship I saw from that, to do the relationship with the DOD, Department of Defense, because they do recruit annually quite a number of young students, either university students or in university or from the team, and train the got now as engineers and what is your my niece was new electrical engineer, she's now a civil engineer. But now she's sitting waiting for something else that has to happen in the defense force. One thing that you can ensure that investment is not just let the bad neutralize. So instead of looking also somewhere else, you can also start from taking those that are there. Yeah, I think I'll end the suppression, but I think the issue of the students, those women, black and young students, the number is not impressive. And I think the department can do more to attract more young people, more women, more black, previously disadvantaged, and also people with disabilities, because there might be a disability of some sort, but the brain is sharp and can be utilized in some thing. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I'm partly covered by Mandy. I will have a few questions here, whereby there's this understanding that there's a teaching of having a new African species, similar to European species. I just want to find out that if that is true, where would be the influences? And who will be supported? Assets? Who will come into the sources of our system like that? And who will own the data? And again, to understand how will the data be shared? So I think it's very, very important, and where will it be stored? So I was going to talk about that issue of student program. It's very, very, very serious, and I support that Honorable Marcel Wilson. Please just look at African child, the most disadvantaged yesterday. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just on your policy objectives, Mr. Martinez, promoting the space industry and developing and fostering national space infrastructure, what exactly are your plans in that regard, considering that space industry is a growing industry worldwide? Industry, positioning itself in the right area within that space. The Space Affairs Act, the amendments that is envisaged, what would that be? And I suppose that would refer to the Department of Energy industry as it has oversight over that act. Thank you very much.
Sorry, I was losing the phone. Okay.
I'm not necessarily going to ask questions with regard to any department. It's more, and excuse my ignorance. When they're talking about the internet overload, what does they mean? And then, when you look at the iPads, you know, iPhone, it's stored somewhere on the satellite. Where is the iCloud, and is that satellite owned by Apple? And then lastly, can we handle unlimited traffic in space? If not, what are the problems for our future?
Thank you, Jason. Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to refer to you to the slide that you showed us where you refer to the facility in Provo. I take it that is a high-tech facility. You've also referred to the agreement and collaboration cooperation between the Department of Trade and Industry and Science and Technology.
understand correctly, the whole facility falls under the Department of Telecommunications and not the STODTI. So how do you deal with that? And so the question is to Dr. Martinez as well as to the Department of Child Cancerology. And then I would also like to know exactly what is done at that facility. How does it fit into the whole space program? And what is the current state of it? Is it operational? Is it being maintained?
Thank you very much, and Honourable Master.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Kathleen in Space Technology, I'll ask two very basic questions. The first one is, when we saw the satellites in the presentation, this seems to be getting more and more crowded. My question is there a possibility that the space will one day be overcrowded? The second question is about ownership. The ownership of the satellites and the space itself, how is it regulated? If there are various criteria, we say South Africa's got this much of a share of the space. How is it regulated between nations and between countries? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Please, that's one of the cases in that which are often all those satellites. But I did not feel that maybe aside the master regulation. But the problem is regulating, I'm not answering for them, but this is a comment. Regulating something where there are other developing areas and there are other developed. Now, how do you regulate make sure that both of them are equal? Thank you very much for that question. Honorable, I want to say that you are not a PLP, but I didn't ask a question.
Thank you, Chair.
And
I know that it's a privilege through the Chair of this committee. I've got four categories of questions. Principally, to DST. The first question is, I believe that the department accesses, distributes and stores thousands of teams every year from various service providers. My question is, do you access and distribute, possibly store, teams from any state or private sector service provider in Russia? And if so, what is the name of that service provider? Second, has DST entered into any contracts, subcontracts, or indeed discussion with a Russian company called NPO Mush in Estonia? Third, in respect of the space policy and objectives. Is it the intention of the government to develop a satellite launch capability? And if it is, does that have anything to do with the modernization and refurbishment of the HOTEC facility? And I ask this question because if it is the intention of government to develop a satellite launch capability, it would mean, and correct me if I'm wrong, that it is government's intention to develop a short to long range missile capability. Effectively, is it the intention of government to develop a satellite launch capability? The last question is, has the council or either of the departments ever received a briefing or a document or entered into a discussion or have any personal knowledge of a project called Project Fleet or alternatively Project Consolidated Fleet? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think that probably four departments that are very important to us. The first, communications, science and technology, and say that
we have seen the movement from 1994. After that, the South African government has moved from what you call a military national complex in the issue of space. And we said, also in the presentation, that we are using space as a developmental idea to make sure that we implement the developmental policy of the government. One of the priorities of the overarching policy of the state today is the implementation of the National Development Plan. And what strategies are in place or the country is pushing within them is necessary in support of the National Development Plan. And there are anchoring policies under the National Development Plan which is industrial. And now, how can we utilize space to catalyze industrialization in South Africa and also support industrialization in Africa? Because if we have an agency that we are establishing in Africa, all its priorities should be in line with the priorities of the African Union. That is the first question. The second question is an articulation. I want you to give me the policy constraints, especially between the Department of Trade and Industry for articulation of implementation of policy. Because the policy is crafted and coordinated by the trade and industry, but implemented by trade and industry. What are the constraints? If there are any of those concerns, specifically in horizontal, what do you see or propose as a way forward to deal with those concerns? The last one is the utilization of the big stock to access the space of those countries that they are cooperating. I'm talking about China, I'm talking about Brazil, I'm talking about India. What are the opportunities that we create that can support? Because you're saying that this industry is under sponsors or is under budget in Africa, but they what we call the big bank. What could be the role of the big bank in opening up opportunities for making sure that research and development and research of the state can be used to also develop those particular countries? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
I don't think we can tell that thing yet, so we don't care about the wind children who are here. You were talking about the role that specialized space in communication.
cooperation agreement exists with the South African Police Service to use satellite technology to track criminals and criminal activities, and also are there any cooperation agreements with the South African Police Service and Customs on the trafficking of illicit drugs. My next question revolves around Shentech and what is the relationship between the department and Shentech, specifically around satellite internet access, and are there agreements or existing cooperations between your department and Shentech? Thank you.
Thank you very much. I think those are the questions coming from members. I think the investment part is something that is headed by something that we've had. It's something that we've got to look into, definitely. That is both finances and human resources. And unfortunately, in South Africa, it's a country that has a few that were capacitated, and there are a lot of people who were left behind. Now, we seem to have a problem in realizing the capacity of human resources in doing this thing. That's why I think some of the members of the were saying, what happened in, from those people that were used to the culture of the manual? Because one imagines that the more people that are capacitated, the more we can compete with the global world. And I think in terms of the strategic goal to Korea, they don't have some of these things that make money, but it's the human capacity that is making them to this, and the Australian aspect. Then, obviously, we talk about regulation and we're clean at the end, looking at what's happening there. But having a regulator now, if you're in a symmetric country, like ours, where the errors have been done down by laws, even if it's 10 years ago. Now, when you regulate, how are you going to make sure that you're not killing some of the food processes that compose that are still developing as so you want to balance that, but much as that's the most, there must be regulation, it helps the regulator. But I think that regulating the situation, you must take into consideration that the country is asymmetric because of its past. Not that we are lamenting about the past, but that has also been taken into consideration. Obviously, the creation of the Toronto Project is very important. There's so, if there is a delegation, there is an application that has already been sent. I think you should start up there to be there. If the members, some members of parliament, better I can contact that person. Okay, you can go ahead and answer questions. There were specific questions to specific people, but the question that will be taken as a I'm not sure that the advocate of this said, but he must have been said.
I think we conclude that because we're quite worried about members, honorable members, not able to fly 50 kilometers when they want to do this. And we think that we could possibly give them indications that indeed they can do that now. But the need for an intervention by policymakers and the implementers is very important. For instance, the issue of space tourism is very topical now. One of our greatest investors in South Africa, Mr. Richard Branson, partly just bought a farm around here, a very big one. But it's also called another one, is Kukuza. He is developing a spaceport in America. He's also developing a space plane that will be taking tourists to space very soon at $200 per pop. Mr. Bashar, you know, will be able to find that soon. $200,000, my apologies. That's more than the way it's running. Hopefully you'll save a bit. So the space tourism aspect, Mr. Chairman, honorable members, has got some policy issues that really are underlying and undercutting the discussions today. That we do not have first a policy of that, you know, in the country. And we need to follow it. Because tourism is one of our biggest draw cards. If we can add the space element to it, probably develop this spot as well, help Mr. President bring his clergy, so we could have an industry going. And the policy coordination aspect is that it should not matter what Dr. Martinez has just indicated, 100 kilometers away, not a space. For the last 50 years, that has been the major sore point in international discussion as to where outer space begins. And there's an aviation aspect to it because Mr. Branson's planes are actually space planes. They're not an outer space object as defined in the international legal regime for outer space, nor are they planes that could be regulated by aviation laws. So there's a need for an intersection there. These are the kind of questions that we want to interact with U.S. policymakers and decision-makers to come to a coherent regulatory framework for issues like outer space, aviation, who's going to regulate space tourism, etc.
Okay.
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 To the international forum
sharing that responsibility. You welcome us, that committee earlier on, United Nations Committee on Fiscal Issues of Our System. It has two technical committees. The SNP committee is led by our colleagues. There's the legal subcommittee, which talks to regulations, which is led by us. And the plenary that brings together both committees, we are also doing that together with them. So there is sharing of the responsibility.
talking about R&D-led industrial development. So
vessel development is sort of being pushed from the laboratory to the research and development domain, rather than the mature technology sharing on the trade and industry side. And then there was a question around launch capabilities and our knowledge about relationships with the Russians and the fruit and so on. Just on launch capabilities, if you consider the policy very carefully, we did not explicitly make reference to launch capabilities, but we did keep the door open in terms of a policy principle around access to space. So we did not say that South Africa will be pursuing launch capability, but we said we needed appropriate access to space. So what that gave us an opportunity to do was to look at whether that was a viable option. The reason why we did not include it, it's a very capital intensive business. Okay? Even though the revenues come, as Dr. Martin mentioned, is only 3% of the global space value chain, the capital nature of investing in that sector alone is very, very expensive. And we didn't know whether we had the resources to do that or not. But what's very important is that when you're building the value chain, you know, you enter the market for satellites and you want to push things into the international market, you need to ensure access to space. So, give you an example. Mandela satellite was launched in 2007, but the satellite was ready in 2009. It was ready 2 years before that, and we were relying on the Russians to launch that. So, that didn't happen because it was outside of our control. And so this question from a strategic perspective, should or shouldn't we be investing in launch capabilities? And I don't think the jury is out as to whether yes or not, the answer is yes or not. We have done some due diligence studies, but the executive and the political principle have not applied their mind as to whether this is a viable option or not. So the jury is still out on that one. With regards to the Russian involvement, I think there are three aspects to it. You mentioned of NPO, fruit, and then the data issue. I think the NPO and the fruit, just to put into perspective, we're from the Department of Science, Technology, and Trade and Industry, but that issue was mainly with the Department of Defense. So, given the military nature of that, we don't have sight of what happened in the Department of Defense with the Russians. So, that's not just an issue that we can necessarily answer from us. But just on the data issue, whether we have access to data that comes from Russian satellites, I should point out that there was an agreement signed by the South African National Space Agency and Roscosmos, one of the agencies of Roscosmos, to access archived Russian satellite data. But that hasn't been taken up. Although the agreement allows us to do that, we haven't moved on that front. So we don't have Russian satellite data currently sitting in our archive, but we have potential to explore it.
I'm going to respond as directed. Just a question in terms of unit capacity development. In order to develop capacity, you also need capacity to develop the capacity. And the 127 students that I've mentioned through the CAPE Insight Education Program is basically a number that we could within the capacity. But what we are looking at now is we've got a proposal that will enable us to expand the training, even utilizing international partnerships in terms of really how some of the cables can be sent to our partners abroad for training. And because we just, firstly, we've got first university for the property that we have. And secondly, we have extremely few universities or the few we have that would that can be provide a training in the aerospace side. So we really are exploring other opportunities. And I think on the issue of the English and the light years, maybe Professor Magnus can highlight something on that. But this really the issue of measurement of distance in the animal space is normally used by acknowledging the whole physics
people that lives have left at Cape Touch. It was good time to send the part 8 in touch second, so we can do the calculation and then say, when we see here and the sunlight strikes us, the sunlight that's striking us now has left the sun 8 minutes ago. And we can also translate when we see the stars. We are seeing the stars through the light that they have emitted about 4 years ago. So that how far away they are, basically. So the programs around human capacity development, the way they are structured, they are linked very much to the mental program. So we don't just give professional or academic training. So there is really experiential work, which is why we are saying you are not going to have somebody come and teach you in order to make a satellite. You are going to do the substances and that they actually do it. So it's hands-on. So the kind of graduates that you actually get out of the system. That's why the first schools that are involved in Subandila that are already now actively engaged in industry and their continents already. So our programs are very much carefully thought through, and we are able to also bring some international partners to help train. But the interesting thing about the tuition program and capital technology is that it now also has an allowance for our students to go to spend a few weeks, I think up to a month, in institution in France. So that's also helpful. The issue around hotel facility is actually currently still under the Department of Public Enterprise. And the discussion that we're looking at in terms of the transfer to the Department of Facilities. But most importantly, the issue of the upgrade of the facilities. We now have a space program that we are starting to work on, as mentioned, the possibility of the launch around 2019. And in order for these facilities to help us do what we need to do, they definitely need to be upgraded, and we still are trying to find the budget to do that. The hotel facility, that's where we do assembly integration testing. So that really needs to be what the detection does. Then there were the questions around the launch capability and answers, but what I also need to mention is that because of the course aspects that the government has indicated, it's actually not all of the state players, actually very few state players who have developed the launch capability because of course. So we find that a lot of the countries manufacture in launch somewhere, and some countries will not even manufacture, but they're getting manufactured somewhere and launch some. So he still has been presented by the Commissioner. The question around the issue of the relationship between the space programs and the national development plan. I think it's also important, very exciting to note that there's been a lot of discussions on the launch of Project Batisa, which is looking at the constitution of our oceans, the economy, looking at oil and gas, agriculture, transport, etc. Operation Batisa will not enable us to achieve what the economy should achieve from the oceans without state funds. We've got very small countries like Norway that have got a much smaller coastline. We've got about 4,000 kilometers of coastline compared to those countries. But the contribution of oceans to the Norwegian economy is so huge, and the space has got a very crucial role to play. And we think that the role of state science in that will be quite central in the growth of our economy and the contribution from the ocean. The issue of the role of space science in crime prevention, etc., and the monitoring of drugs and stuff. I think when we mentioned the long-term goal of being self-sufficient in space, it's basically where you can do all those kind of things. Because as long as you still depend on buying from elsewhere, much more than carrying that. And I think it's also very much linked to what happens to our oceans as well. Which space like a sugar or space industry will be able to do much more than we currently do. I might also mention here that some of the work that we do, for example, at the Hermann Magnetic Observatory in the area of space weather is very crucial. And it's one of those areas where you realize the value when you actually are in trouble. Because through space weather, we're able to monitor the possibilities of solar flares, how we can really turn around that. And as we have highlighted in the presentation with Sandra, that if you have a destructive solar flare, it can cripple your energy supply system for years, which means we can really enter the darkness for years. So when we monitor it, we're able to plan. That enables us to use the data information, which actually already has computers to make sure that we avoid some of the potential disasters. So the strength, of course, if it increases, is going to allow us to upgrade the facilities that we need to upgrade. It's also going to allow us to train the capacity that we need to do space. And what we also need to bear in mind is that even though we don't have the numbers, there's something very peculiar about the circumstance system, is that it's highly productive. So with the number of scientists that we have and engineers in space science, we actually do what, in my view, many countries will be able to do with our numbers. So you look at our numbers and compare with other countries, we see it in the group, but we don't want to put a strain on these numbers that we have. We want to make sure that they are actually increased so that we can be able to draw the maximum value from the weather.
Thank you very much. Very good.
Yet a head within one egg can still make so much money.
volunteer. I think everybody knows that I've played one. DLT has a lot of information that is interesting. That is very important, but that we don't know about. Which is what we want to tell us. Okay, come back.
Thank you, honorable members. I'll respond to the question regarding amendments in the Safe Affairs Act. If you can be reminded of the presentation of Dr. Martinez, which highlighted that the current Safe Affairs Act was actually done over 30 years ago, and you know, it was done during the era where more focus was on the military use of space activities. And you know, even though it is responsible of the United Nations Space Treaties, the Outer Space Treaty, the Liability Convention, the Registration Convention, which you mentioned, it is very, very important for us as the country because we have to protect our national interests to be in a position to be responsive of the current needs. We have had a number of developments. We've had the Space Agency Act that came into place, which instituted what we now call the National Space Agency. We've had many other small developments within, nationally, that actually require some more of a regulatory response. So, but on the international framework, you know, we have a number of obligations that the treaties require us that we are able to, especially as a country, to ensure that there is compliance with those requirements in terms of the liability. For instance, if anything happens, whether it's a satellite or it hits another satellite, the state is liable for that activity. It doesn't matter if that satellite that caused such an accident, whether it's a governmental satellite or a private sector satellite or anything else. So it makes us, make the decision makers to be in a position to make sure that who has, who can launch the outer space activity. On what conditions, and so on and so on. And also, even in terms of the registration, because there are those obligations to make sure we register the case ourselves. If we do not issue licenses, if we do not supervise the activities, we would never know if anything occurs. So it makes us to, we are at a stage where we have to be, to make sure that we are seen internationally to be fully compliant with some of the, the international obligations. We have also ratified recently the Liability and the Registration Convention, which was not previously included. You know, those issues of liability, those issues of registration were never included in the previous legislation, which means that at this stage we need to be more careful and make sure that those areas are addressed. And also looking at the fact that, you know, the Space Affairs Act also refers, you know, clearly on humanist technologies, in which is also a function of another unit, the Non-Proliferation Council within the Department. So that makes, you know, the Council, our Council, and, you know, the Non-Proliferation Council to sort of, you know, at some point we have some clashing roles. So, you know, this has been a process of actually making sure that we identify all those, you know, areas where there is conflict and areas where there is gaps to make sure that we have a comprehensive legislation that is, you know, that is more practical and applicable to today's needs. And also, there have also been developments internationally. For instance, the space debris mitigation. You know, we never thought, you know, even the UN never thought there would be so many satellites. And the need now to make sure that you put some regulations that make sure that, you know, as countries, when we develop our space objects, we make sure that we put some guidelines to make sure that it would be and the space debris. Also, there are issues of use of nuclear power sources, because some satellites, they are launched in big space, so they would have to use, you know, nuclear power sources. So there are already current issues that are coming. So what are the issues of safety? So
how can we be able to make sure that we have proper conditions for the environment, I mean, for the industry? Not to how can we balance making sure that, you know, we want our industry to be engaged? That's another issue, because previously space activities were mainly for government. So now, over the years, there's been more of private sector involvement. There's also more of universities looking satellite. So the framework, I mean, everything has changed. Things have changed. So even our legislation, it's meant to make sure that it addresses all the changes that are happening. And I think I will hand over to Advocate Kula to also highlight some of this. Thank you.
Okay, I'll look before you come out, just the hand from another man. Are you there? But before you come, you know, as we said, you are not elected to get employed. We employ you as an advocate to help us, and you look at this international situation. But one thing that we take is that you are South African. You understand South Africa. So when you go there, represent, even if it's an international city, but you look at your country and is this right for my country or is it not, hoping that you are patriotic, you know your country. And this is what we do, because we don't have to know the chance to stand on our behalf when you look at those things. So if you don't take a developed country and take what is done to your country and come and push it and hope it's going to work, and you understand that you must understand where we come from. And I think it's an important issue, you don't have to answer this. Okay, Honorable Men.
Chair, I put up my hand just because I had a follow up question. May I ask a follow up question to you? This is a question to you, Dr. Mishnia, who I understand from the DHT. You said you chose your word carefully, that my question is in relation to Project Fleet or Project Consolidated Fleet and NPO MASH. We're mainly in the DOD. You said mainly. My question to you is there any aspect of that project which resides in DST specifically? Has DST been entered into any contract, subcontract, had any discussions with NPO NASH in the respect of this project? You know, I'm particularly interested in the ground station.
Maybe let's start with the advocate and then you'll come. You won't forget it.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Just to reiterate, basically, a honorable member there asked that the issue of space crowding and ownership of satellites, so how within the framework, how is space regulated and does South Africa have a share? And how do you regulate between the tensions on the developed and developing countries? As Honorable Chair has just mentioned, it has been mentioned through the main presentation by Dr. Martinez that space is an international activity. Even the first man-made launch space object that triggered the need to have space law, Sputnik in 1957, actually illustrated the problems that countries will face when a foreign object is settling above them. So immediately the issue of national sovereignty, security came to the fore. So the main countries at that time in 1957, mainly the USA, USSR, came together to test out, you know, the legal framework for international space activities. So that's where it really started. The issue trying to figure out exactly how we protect our national interest from this eye that's playing over us. So national security concern is very important along those lines. Ownership of a satellite, because a satellite is a space object, really lies on the person or the country or the agency that has constructed and launched and is operating that satellite. How do they do that? There are various ways in which they can claim ownership by registering the satellite in the national register, as they just concluded. But that is a factor of the international space treaties. We were told that there are about five space treaties, the Outer Space Treaty of 1957, Liability Convention, the Registration Convention, the Rescue of Astronauts, and the Moon Treaty. All those are treaties really defining various aspects of engagement in outer space. And they've been developed mainly as a result of technological development. When a new technology comes in, there's a need to see how to regulate that. That indeed has created lots of problems because the developed countries have now run satellites that are unused to view what they call orbital slots, where satellites can be located, where they park. And those orbital slots are now being saturated. So the developing countries are asking, how do we now get our opportunities once our satellites can get the orbital slot that is requested for the national coverage of their space objects. So there's been many debates on the need to create an international responsive legal regime. And this is done through the body that has been mentioned here, UNIMOPAS, the United Nations Committee on the Peaceful Uses of Outer Space. They look at the overall legal basis for using outer space. In terms of frequencies, a satellite must then have a path in order to put its data or whatever from the satellite to Earth. You need a frequency to do that. That is a function of the International Telecommunications Union, which we participate in as a country through the Department of Communication. So if the doctor here has good capabilities to launch a satellite and they want to offer communication services, they construct their satellites and they come to SACSA here for authorization to launch and operate the satellite. But then they might get a frequency. Where are they going to actually be downloading and uploading the information from the base stations here to the satellite? Then that is a function of the DOC. So there's a need for extreme coordination between a whole lot of government departments, not just DST and DG alone. We've got DST now, we've got DOT, we will have to come in on the launching aspect because that's when now we're talking about space traffic management. Because now, right now, the major problem that the space community is facing is there are no rules of the road in terms of how to actually put your operator space object in case, you know, your avoidance maneuvers to avoid collisions. Those needs to be negotiated at this international forum. And as the good doctor just indicated, it's our job to ensure that the South African's needs and interests are correctly reflected.
But I'm so advocate, you help us in coordinating departments. I think one mistake that was also upset is that we get chosen for 5 years. Now in that 5 years, even when I need GST, I want to have my own impact in that 5 years. I wouldn't like the other department to take the accolades. Yet I'm working for the same country. So they invented this whole thing of saying, no, let me do my things and they can delay the COP 1 and forgetting that we've got to intervene. It's about the government, it's about South Africa, it's not about me. And I'm going to use that's why we like the energy in this talk from 10 years. So that whatever I do, if I die, somebody takes over and it continues. Without the accolades, the main book of one another, the accolades, the main book of South Africa. Okay, Dr. Biden.
Thank you. May I just respond to this and I'll come back to the other question? The other question asked around the policy constraints implementation coming from the CCI perspective. And I think what's important to recognize is there has been a protocol that has been signed between the ministers of DCI and DST in terms of how the two departments will work around space issues. But what's more important as well is that within the council, there's representation from the Department of Science and Technology and from South African National Space Agency. As much as it's a policy regulatory body, the implementation players also sit in that regulatory body to ensure that of interface. The issue on the project flute, my use of the word mainly. So the committees will be aware of the kind of sensitive episode around Sunset at that point in time, where as a private company it wasn't financially viable because there were not enough contracts or there weren't any contracts coming to Sunset as a private company. And the one opportunity they were pursuing was in consultation with the Department of Defense was to investigate whether they could have a percentage work share of fruit projects that the Department of Defense was in discussions with the Russians. That didn't turn out because the Russians didn't want any other foreign entity working on a program with where there was going to be manufacturing and stuff. And I think it relates to application of IP and so on. So from the DSP side, that's the investigation that we were having with discussion with the Department of Defense. But that didn't go anywhere with the chair, just to be honest. So as a consequence, Frontex didn't land any contracts around that. And so the next action was for us, because we see Frontex as a critical strategic capability for the country in terms of traffic manufacturing. We then absorbed that into the now OTEC, which Dr. Martinez has indicated that it's space tech. Frontex within the now is called space tech. And so that's a strategic capability which we had to absorb. But there was a discussion around it, but it didn't go in.
Thanks, Ryan. Maybe Dr. Martinez, now that he's come. You'll tell us why Mboneni doesn't, because he's left handed, he doesn't have his ring on the right side. The ring from Mboneni's on the right side, because he's left handed.
Not so.
Is that not trying? He's not his ring is on the left side, and he's in his left hand to right. He's more present than most of the people on the left side. If you want to tell it, if you want me to tell me the science behind it, I'll tell you. I must not to hang on, because there's no time on the table after the meeting. Okay, so.
Thank you, Chair. You know, I wish that when I was going to primary school, my teachers were as enlightened as you. I used to be left-handed, but back then it was seen as the wrong thing. I was going to write with my right hand, and when I became a rebellious teenager, I decided that this is nonsense. So I started writing with my left hand, and I'm fully ambidextrous, which is very useful in science. So, my colleagues have done a very good job, I think, of giving comprehensive responses to pretty much all the questions, and I'm mindful of the time, so I'm just going to make a few very brief remarks, and then I think leave it there. So the issue of space debris was kind of an golden thread that ran through a number of the questions, the concern about the crowded space environment, and this is really the biggest headache of space operators at the moment. Anybody who operates a satellite in space, every morning they wake up wondering, who's going to run into me today? If the other satellite has maneuvering capability, then there can be an exchange of communications and there's a decision about who moves out of the way. But if it's an inert piece of space junk, then it won't move out of the way and one has to. And this has serious economic implications, because if you have a satellite delivering commercially important services, the lifetime of that service, and therefore the profitability, is related to the lifetime of the satellite, which very often is governed by the amount of fuel on board. So these collision avoidance maneuvers are actually economically significant to space operators. People had wondered for a long time if satellites could collide in space, and in fact this reality happened a few years ago. There was a collision of a Iridium communications satellite with a defunct Cosmos satellite from the Russian Federation, produced a huge amount of space debris. And every time there's a collision, the debris can affect other satellites. It's really a big cause for concern. So in the last 20 years or so, space has changed from being seen as this, you know, in that slide you see this endless open domain. We actually now see it as a limited natural resource. And so therefore the discussion in bodies like the UN has fundamentally changed from the early years of the space age, where the debates were dominated by the two superpowers and everybody else was there more or less as a passenger in the discussions, to now where there is so many satellites, so many objects in space, that no single country can control the space environment, and therefore they have to enter into a dialogue with all other space users, and that's what makes this a very exciting period of space rulemaking. But as the chair alluded, there's this asymmetry in capabilities. And so countries like South Africa can play an important and leading role in the African continent in making sure that as we are discussing these new norms of behavior in space, that no barriers to entry are put in there, so that either us or other countries that are aspiring to use the space environment for their national development would face barriers put in place by more advanced space actors. So it's very important that we capacitate our people, our diplomats, our scientists, so that when we engage in these multilateral fora, we are punching we have actually been punching above our weight in a number of these fora, and very important. There were some questions about the iCloud and whether satellites are used to store data on the iCloud. I don't believe so, but I wouldn't be surprised if the satellites are part of the relay mechanism to move data from servers that store to the end user, depending, of course, on the respective locations. Just one other fact, a question that I wanted to touch on, because I'm not sure if it was touched on by my other colleagues, and that was the question about the opportunity to leverage our BRICS and ICSA partnerships. It is the case that our BRICS and ICSA partners all have more developed space capability than we do, and I think this provides a huge opportunity to leverage those partnerships to allow us to bootstrap ourselves from that bottom left green bubble maybe into the middle orange one. And the areas in which I see possibility are, for example, human capital development, training of young people. Another important area is access to space. As Dr. Mutsavi was saying, we have done in South Africa studies to see whether it's viable to develop launch capability, but it's very, very expensive. But our BRICS partners have that capability, and very often when these rockets, when these big rockets go up, there is spare capacity in them that can be used to launch other satellites. So access to space is an important aspect. And then the third area where we could leverage our BRICS partnerships is also access to space data and services. And to give one practical example, our DST colleagues have negotiated arrangements with our BRICS partners, Brazil and China, to receive data from a satellite program called CBRS, the China-Brazil Satellite Earth Resources System. And this provides access to Earth observation data that can be used for our benefit. So this is just some additional remarks, and I think unless there are questions from the honorable members from our side, I think we appreciate very much the opportunity to engage with this joint sitting of the two committees. I think it's a very good example of this kind of cooperative governance in action, and I hope that we will have similar opportunities in the future as the review of the Act progresses and we take our space arena forward. There was a question about cell phone receptions, the role of satellites in that. Unless you have an Iridium satellite phone, which does actually directly use a communication satellite, the way in which normal GSM phones rely on space is through the GPS and GLONASS constellation that issue timing signals that synchronize networks. So distributed systems like the internet, ATM networks, cell phone networks, they're all financial transaction networks that all require very accurate time stamps so that when it's a given time here, it's exactly the same time there. And these are things that rely on milliseconds. That kind of synchronization is achieved from space infrastructure, and cell phone networks rely on that.
Thank you very much, Mr. Minister. I don't think a lot of time is going to be very difficult, but let's just summarize. We, GST, the council and GP, you are talking to members of parliament. These are lawmakers. These are policymakers. It's the top structure of the council. Outside it's the top structure. What becomes important for me is that if they can have enough information of what they are doing, so that when they plan and they do things, because they are there on behalf of South Africa, and they need to have this information, even if they have not done PhDs and whatnot, but they need to have this information so that when they debate and they make laws and they decide how much money to make in this development, they know exactly where should be taken on the world. I think this is one of the very important areas. As we accept the report and we think that we're going to have many more of these meetings to make sure that members understand what is going on, so they And obviously, this goes back to our faith. Whether we like it or not, we have forgiven ourselves and before. We have accepted, but we might not forget where we come from. And if we forget, we might not be able to move forward and do things properly. But we have forgiven. Now, I'm bringing this forward because it was a few that were exposed to this science. A lot were not exposed. Yet, any country depends on its human capacity to do things. Now, it's time for us to make sure that everybody, the more numbers we have in South Africa, the more they've got to understand, the more they've got to do the science. And that's why we need to talk to time again. Without emotions, without wanting to look at each other, but say, we are patriotic for South Africa, we want to move forward and build a better country, not for us, but for the future generations. And we're very happy the way you presented it to us. But there's another topic issue. I think every month we hear of ritual killing, witchcraft killing. It's because we don't understand that. We don't ask ourselves why. If somebody has got hemoptosis because of cheating, and you go into that person, because you don't understand what you don't understand the science between that hemoptosis, between the science beyond that. And I think Dr. Malo, oh, he was the one who told us that. He said we know only 25% was only the knowledge of the person, meaning that 96% we don't know what's happening. So with you, they're going to be helping us to make sure that we are going to take that edge and see whether there are things, but we need your assistance in helping us to make sure that happens. And we still think that as lawmakers, there's a little money that goes to you. Especially if they are not sure about spending it, but dear to do it in contact with them time and again. We think that there's very little money that goes to them with the work that they're doing and with the important that they are in this country. With that, we'll accept you.